Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I do like look like leader of a chess club in high school. At that time, and probably still, I am a BTEC Kenny McIntosh.
Back on Cultaholic Island with a resident of Cultaholic Island. This one's been a long time coming. It's Fraser Porter.
Hey, Tom. It's weird getting to have a go on Desert Island Graps after editing so many for the Patreon.
I'd like to thank folks. Fraser, who is the man that edits these.
Yeah, all the video versions. That's my little role.
I say all, been a bit slack, mate. I've been doing them lately.
Yeah, true. Just, I've not been pulling my weight, for sure.
The beauty is, that, and this is always, it's a champagne problem, as I've been told, whereby you simply are too busy doing many other things.
Yeah, it's got a little bit busier recently. There's been a lot of work, which is good fun. Mm. It's good fun, but yeah, I've not been able to edit a few of these Desert Island Graps recently. But it's been
because he's had better things to do.
They've been going out. Tom's doing a great job on them. Who's getting this one?
Not all of them. That'd be Tom. Can you edit this one? Yeah. Thanks, Tom. Would like to thank you for bringing Iron Brew to the island.
Yeah, we got it. As you said,
get all the Scottish stuff
down,
out of the way.
Like, you're going to have to get the brew. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to have to get the brew. It's the Scotland's national drink. It runs in my veins.
It does, brother. Mm. Best Doctor.
Oh, so Doctor Who, we're going straight into that one.
No, I mean Medical Doctor, because I've got this spot on my back.
Dr. Meldrum, he was pretty good.
Good
he
to
did
know.
A lot of good home visits when I was younger.
That's reassuring.
The 11th Doctor, Matt Smith. Mm. If we're talking Doctor Who, that's
quite a late
that's
Doctor, why so?
Just, I mean, it was I preferred his stories. David Tennant and him are very similar in terms of who I would choose as my Doctor, but my first Doctor was Christopher Eccleston.
Right.
Favourite Doctor is Matt Smith.
Do you think a lot of it comes down to the Doctors that you grew up with?
Probably. I mean, it came back in 2005, so my parents were like, well, we'll watch Doctor Who. Let's go and do this. It really depends on the story for me. I just prefer the writing for Matt Smith's Doctor. I think I prefer an alien Doctor to a human Doctor in David Tennant. But that's why Matt Smith's probably my favourite.
Away from here, you do a podcast called Who Do You Think You Are?
Yeah.
Which is basically the non-cultaholic classic Doctor Who review. Which is brilliant. Which I love that you do.
Yes.
Have you discovered anything about the old Doctor Who's? Are you more astute to the older Doctors now?
So we're not doing classics. We are doing New Who from 2005 onwards.
Are you planning to do more than New Who or just Old Who?
Potentially. Mm-hmm. The way we're doing it is because me and my co-host Jordy, we grew up watching Doctor Who. So we started it in the fact that I was like, oh, we were just chatting. I was like, I've just started rewatching Doctor Who. And he was like, oh, so have I. So we're like, oh, well, let's chat about it like we would normally, but let's record it. So that's where it sort of came from. But we are doing just New Who, going from Christopher Eccleston right through to Jodie Whittaker.
How do you find watching them back again now? And being critical of them as well.
Yeah, so I think they still hold up. I mean, there's some terrible moments in them. The Absorbaloff, if anyone is a Doctor Who fan, will know the Absorbaloff, Peter Kay, decided to join Doctor Who, and it was a kid designed it, so I'm going to be kind to it.
Okay.
Not that I am usually on the Doctor Who podcast. It was a Blue Peter entry to design a villain. It was bad, Tom. It was so bad.
I love the idea.
If I'm editing this, I'm going to put a photo up on the Patreon so you can see what the Absorbaloff is. It was Peter Kay in a fat green suit. And it was him just being like, you're all right, love. That's the future, that is. It was just not...
So he did all the Peter Kay lines and stuff.
Well, he did Peter Kayisms.
Space garlic bread.
But, you know, that's the future. Yeah, pretty much. He was doing like the misheard lyrics. He absorbed people into his body and their faces would appear on it. And there was lots of...
I mean, I don't mind that as a concept. Okay.
The end of
without seeing it.
Yeah. The end of the episode, spoilers for it, ends with him absorbing Moaning Myrtle. And she then, for some reason, the doctor gets rid of the Absorbaloff. She becomes part of a concrete slab, and her boyfriend takes the concrete slab home with her face on it, and it's living, and it's implied they have sexual relations.
Oh.
It's not a good episode. It's really not a good episode. Oh.
Now, you see, when you started talking about that,
yeah,
my brain started going, oh, I might make a little joke about what they do when they get home, and I don't need to.
Cause... No, they mention it in the show. They go, oh, well, we still have a bit of a love life, don't we?
Oh, no.
It's also a Doctor Light episode. He's not in it that much.
See, you need the Doctor in it, really, don't you? But we'll move on from Doctor Who. Just what I'll say is, that was speculation. Has been rife for a long time about new Doctor. And obviously, this question has been answered. Do you have a preference? Like, who do you think will make a good Doctor that has another fair crack of the whip yet?
With the next Doctor, Shuti Gatwa, I think is a really good choice.
Yeah.
Who's an act that I'd like to see? Oh,
I don't want to wish away the new Doctor, but like moving, obviously, we'll have to move down the line.
I'm really not sure who I'd want as a future Doctor. There's so many actors that I prefer when it's an unknown. So like, I would prefer it being someone I don't have a clue about, because then I've got no typecast in my head as to who they are. And most of the Doctors I've not really seen. Peter Capaldi was kind of the exception. He was in the thick of it, and I'm like, that's Malcolm Tucker, so he's off to swear. So the Doctor was a big departure from that, whereas David Tennant, I'd seen him in Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
So I prefer an unknown, so I won't answer that with an actual actor. Give me some unknown people.
An unknown. Okay, we venture into the unknown.
Yes.
As we take you onto the desert island, and as is customary, what you need to do is, whilst we're here, tell me three wrestling matches that you would love to watch while stranded here, and we'll talk about them one by one and go through a load of other stuff in between. What would you like your first match to be, Fraser Porter?
It's my first match. This took a lot of thinking. I'd narrowed it down to like two, and I was like, I need to have a third one. And... it was like, okay, here it is. It's WrestleMania 24. We're going back to 2008. And of course, it's Edge versus The Undertaker in the main event of WrestleMania 24. Okay? It was not my peak of being a wrestling fan, but it was just, I still was like, this is the coolest thing. Like, this is it. This is the thing. Running into school, chatting about it with my mates, because my mates still liked wrestling at that point, because I was in primary school. So I was, what, 2008? I was... 9 when this match happened. It was good. It was so good. And I've stayed up for every WrestleMania and watched it live since WrestleMania 21. Parents didn't know that.
I was going to ask, because at 9, like, how are you getting around the parental guardianing?
Parents were pretty chill with wrestling. They were pretty cool with it. They were like, oh, it's on late. They would sometimes get me the box office if we had it or whatnot. But I would often stay up and watch it on the Dodge. I just like in my room on my phone, right, let's get a stream working. Or at that point, it would be my laptop.
I was going to say, like, so that would have been, so in your laptop, under the bed.
I distinctly remember WrestleMania 28 a few years later. My dad used to be in the police and he would work like really weird shifts. So he'd be getting up at like 3 a.m. heading off for work. Now, WrestleMania 28... before we get onto the actual match that we're talking about, but WrestleMania 28 was a long show. It ended at like 5 a.m. and I had school at 9. So I'm sitting there, cover over me, laptop out, watching it, hear movement, and it was right as like the Rock scene was kicking off. And he peers his head in the room and I'm like, I'm not awake. Managed to survive that one, but he'll probably listen to this if he finds this on the, if he sees me share.
Had he ever caught you staying up late to watch wrestling before?
But it was just a case of like, he was like, we just go and watch it downstairs. Just go, just put it on the TV. He'd stay up and watch SmackDown with me.
Yeah.
But WrestleMania 24, I watched it live in my room and then ran into school the next day and been like, I can't believe. I was really expecting Edge to beat Undertaker.
Were you disappointed?
Yeah.
Really?
I was a massive Edge fan. Still am. Like, I think he's fantastic. And at that point I was like, Edge is undefeated at WrestleMania. How is The Undertaker going to beat him? He's old. Edge is like really cool. Like, there's no way he's gonna lose. So that's, I was like really disappointed that the Undertaker beat Edge. Such a good opportunity.
See, I love hearing stories like this because, like, I go back to when, like, I was maybe 8 or 9 years old, and the like, and I was sort of bought into the good guys, the bad guys thing. So, like, had that been me in the mindset that I was in, I'd be like, "Yay, the Undertaker beat the Nasty Man Edge," and it shows a real change in the generations where the fact that you're just going, "Oh, Edge is cool. Edge is baddie, but he's cool."
Yeah, I think something drew me to him. I was just like, "He's really, really cool. He's like not." He's not like every other bad guy that's just like, "Oh, I hate your town" or whatever. Like, in 2008, 2009, 2007 through 2008 was kind of a weird time in WWE. It was very much, we're going into PG, but we're not quite yet. We're still got some of that ruthless aggression stuff. And I've been watching since 2003 WWE. So I'd sort of grown up with Edge as, like, he's just cool. He's just the guy that I followed, him and John Cena, and then I turned on John Cena.
Why did you turn on John Cena?
He was lame, wasn't he? he was just not cool. He was like.
But was there a defining moment where you went, "I don't like him anymore"?
That's a good question. Probably. It was probably after 2008. It was probably like, probably WrestleMania 24. Probably on the back of that. Triple threat match that he had, because I was still really hyped at Royal Rumble when he came back. Like, him appearing at the top of Madison Square Garden, arms crossed, cap down, that was insane. And I was popping for that back then, but I think it was probably that summer at some point, maybe. What was his feud going in? Was it JBL, I think, was his feud in the summer that year?
Seems to ring a bell, yeah. Was it the JBL, his poopy thing? Or was
it, yeah, it was him. It was him in Crime Time going in at JBL, which... Nah, not for me.
No, that's where it went. Oh, yeah, that's where it went. You started watching in 03. What drew you to it?
So I want to say it was probably around about 03. I started by going and hanging out with my friend Michael. We'd go around to his house, and he had Sky Sports, so we'd watch Raw, the replay. It's weird. I can't really remember it all back then. I just remember going around to his, and there'd be wrestling on. We'd sit and we'd watch it. We'd have dinner, and then be like, "Cool. I'm so-and-so, you're the other guy. Let's have a match." And we'd try and replicate the match, and then his mum would run up and be like, "Stop wrestling! It's you're knocking things off. There's a TV in the room. Leave it." So then she'd be like, "Go inside and play football." And I'm like, "I don't like football." So 2003, sort of then, we never had it on TV in our house. We didn't have the TV channel for it, so it was a case of me looking online. And at that point, I was very much a casual fan. I would go around to Michael's and watch it every week when we'd hang out. That wasn't like my whole life is wrestling like it pretty much is now. that and Doctor Who.
Do you still hang out with Michael? Do you still see Michael?
I've not seen Michael in years, to be honest. When we left high school, we kind of all went off and did different things. I think he's still in Peebles. I think I saw... No, I did see him about a year, 2 years ago, right before the pandemic. I think I saw him at a pub in Peebles. You're right.
It's funny because you always assume that, like, you have these such strong ties to people when you're younger. And you think, "Oh my God, when we meet again, it'd be amazing." But it's normally just a case of, "Hey."
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. There seems to be, not to knock on Peebles at all, but there seems to very much be a divide of people that leave and don't really come back, and then people that stay and really, really love the town or really passionate about the town. And I've noticed that since in the past few years, moving up to Edinburgh and then moving down here, been like, I don't really see or get to see the folk from school that have just stayed, because there is quite a divide. I don't really want to go back to Peebles.
Why are you on the side of people who don't want to go back to Peebles?
It's a very small town.
Yeah.
No, well, as I say small, it's a decent sized town, but it's very much everyone knows everyone. Everyone knows your gossip. Everyone knows what's going on. I like to be out in a city. I'd much rather be in a city, as much as I really loved growing up in the countryside, because I got freedom. But
what was the last time you went to Peebles like? Can you remember?
What was the last time? I was there back in May. I was looking after the dog. It was great. Parents went on holiday to Rome. They were like, "Can you come and look after the dog?" So when went back, I just chilled at the house for a couple of days. It was nice.
Did you go to any old haunts? Did you catch up with any old friends? Did you roll back the years?
Well, I went up for my graduation, so I did have my uni. I went and met my uni mates that weekend. But back in Peebles now, there was not much going on. Most of the folk that I've kind of either lost touch with, or like I went and saw my cousin because he lives next door to me back home. So it's not tough to be like, do you want to get a pint? Yeah. So we did. But yeah, there's not much going on in Peebles.
What was young Fraser living in Peebles? What were your ambitions? What was it you wanted to do? Because I know you obviously went to uni and you graduated as a journalism degree. Mm-hmm. What was it you wanted to do? Did you have any aspirations before then?
To be fair, it's pretty much been journalism.
Yeah.
But I just didn't know that. Like, being quite young, I really want to write about video games or wrestling, or really want to report on news. I was really fascinated by news and like politics and modern studies and stuff. That was constantly history, modern studies, and geography was my thing at school. I really was interested in them, and I was like, oh, what can I do? And I'd blog quite a bit, I'd write as much as I could. So really pretty much that. Obviously when I'm younger, I'm like, I'm going to be the doctor in Doctor Who, I'm going to be an actor or whatnot. But for me growing up, it was want to write or do video stuff or do something like that. And then my backup was like, well, I'm really ingrained in theatre. Unfortunately, I cannot sing. And I've seen, there was a tweet that really resonated with me a few years back. And it was a journalism student, it's a musical theatre student that can't sing. And it's very apt in my case. Oh. Cannot sing for the life of me.
But you have the passion to sing, but you absolutely don't have the ability.
Correct.
Yeah, that rings true. Yeah. Who were some of those, because it's when you're at that age, when you're like a younger man, like you don't always necessarily go, I'm just fascinated by news and information. Like, what were some of your influences there? Was there any? Or
no, I'm not really sure. My gran, funnily enough, when I went to do journalism at uni, she was like, oh, you were always carrying around pen, paper, and writing things down. You're always doing this. You're always like, at primary school, we did a school newspaper, and I was a big part of that. And I did stuff for it. I just never pieced it together. That's probably what I would want to go and do.
This is something I'm enjoying.
I'm really enjoying. I'm like, yeah. Or like, me and my friend Ben, we'd make comic book strips just for the fun of it. Just being like, oh, let's make a comic book. Again, I was the one doing all the sort of writing and the designing of like a newspaper front off it. And I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense why I like doing InDesign at uni and why I like doing the newspaper aspect of uni. So really, it sounds quite boring, but it's pretty much always been that, but I just didn't know it was that.
No, you just didn't put the pieces together.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
What did you write for your primary school newspaper?
God, I think it was about something about dogs or something.
Is there a top story? I'm intrigued to see what the top story of the primary school in Peebles that day.
Maybe primary four. Now, for anyone that's on a different English schooling system, primary four is our fourth year of primary school.
Okay, makes sense.
So we're about, trying to think what age would I have been? P4, 2006. How old was I? 2006? Seven or eight. Yeah, probably around about then. So we did, it was probably about dogs, I think, in the town, or like something to do with the school. If I can find it, I'll speak to my mum, see if I can find it. Again, if it's the video version, I'll put a little snapshot on screen.
If we found it,
it'll be on screen. So let's react like we've seen it. Oh, that's a great story. I'm really glad I've improved since then.
That's incredible. You mentioned your dad was a policeman.
Yes.
He worked all sorts of weird hours. What did your mum do?
She was a childminder.
Yeah?
Yeah, so like my house was constantly filled with other kids, which was great when I was that age. My mates would come round, and there'd be every day I'd get to hang out with folk and we'd play games, watch TV. But it was when I got to maybe 12, 13, where I'm like, oh God, my house is filled with kids. I'm like, and they're like,
can we have a go of your PlayStation?
I'm like, no, you cannot have a go of my PlayStation.
your patience wears so thin.
Yeah, like we had two living rooms. We were very fortunate to have an extension in the house, and that was the back living room, my mum and dad's living room. My living room was the front of the house with my brother, and we had the PlayStation in there, the Nintendo Wii, games room, really.
Right.
But that was also where the kids would play during the day, so there would be babies and toddlers throughout the day, and then after school, you'd get the after school kids in, and then at night, there would maybe be folk being babysat, you know, waiting for the parents to pick them up. So it was like, I really want to get home and play Assassin's Creed 2, but some so-and-so is watching CBBC or CBeebies, like watching Tracy Beaker. Now, no knock to Tracy Beaker.
No, no disrespect to Tracy.
What a show, but when I'm wanting to play Assassin's Creed 2, that doesn't resonate with me.
So that would have been frustrating on many fronts, because not only because obviously it means that your house has always got visitors in.
Yeah.
But also, like, your mum is being pulled away from you to other kids.
I didn't mind that aspect so much, because my mum always gave us a load of time. Like, yeah. It wasn't as much as that. It was just like, oh, well, she's just looking after the kids. And it wasn't so bad when we were young, because it was like, oh, it's our mates being looked after, and we became friends with them all. So it was just like, oh, well, I'm just hanging out with my friends. I don't want mum around when I'm hanging out with my mates. But no, it wasn't bad in that sense. She didn't ever have to divert time away to other kids or whatnot. With the house that we were in and the amount of space that we had, if I wanted peace and quiet, I could go up to my room. It was just like, there was so much noise. I'd be like, oh God, just shut up.
Can you remember moving out?
Yeah, because it wasn't that long ago. I moved out in July 24th, 2019. Thinking, this is great. I'm moving to Edinburgh. I'm going into my third year at uni. Because I commuted for the first 2 years. It was cheaper that way. So third year of uni, I was like, this is amazing. I've got the Fringe coming up. I've got 2 years left. Anything is possible in this 2 years in Edinburgh. I got 6 months and then the pandemic, or 7 months or whatever it was, and the pandemic started. So I would have saved so much money if I didn't move out. Because I was paying for a house that was 2 minutes from my uni for online Zoom classes. But I do remember moving out. The most thing, I feel sorry, apologies mum and dad, but the thing I was most excited for, or most gutty to be leaving, was the dog. My wee baby boy.
Do you know what? I get that. What's your dog's name?
So my dog is Marvin. But Marvin. It's quite sad, but when we were moving out, my previous dog, Dudley, passed away very suddenly. He was very young. He was only two. And my parents were away on holiday. They'd been in America, so I was looking after him, and he started getting really ill. So I go around to my gran, who lives around the corner, and we're like, this isn't good. They get back. He's deteriorated. The dog passes away like 2 or 3 days after they get back, and they're like, well, we can't live without another dog. We need a dog in our lives, especially with the boys moving out and stuff like that. So I moved out. And then a week later, they got the new dog. And I felt like, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe there's a puppy in my house and I don't live there anymore.
Your constant bad timing. You get a house just before the pandemic. Right, I know. You move out before a puppy arrives.
A little puppy. Although I did, I was very fortunate in going to pick him up and meet him for the first time. And I think he's my wee boy. He's my wee boy. Because every time I go home, he pees on the floor in excitement.
Oh.
Like, everywhere. Thank God.
We all do when you arrive.
Yeah, thank God we've got wooden flooring. It was bad, especially when I surprise him.
Oh no.
You know, my dad, because my dad will be like, we've not told Marvin you're coming this week.
Oh no, bless him.
He's a good wee boy.
It's, and I think you feel it more when it's like when you're saying goodbye to pets. There's no disrespect to the mums and dads.
Of course.
But it's because they don't understand.
Exactly.
You know, you like when me and Alex go away for a couple of weeks soon, it's like, I mean, it's different with a cat because he doesn't really give a shit.
Yeah.
But the idea that he thinks, oh, I guess this is where I live now.
Yeah.
Oh, it breaks my heart. So no, we're coming back.
Yeah.
Oh, this is my life now, I guess. Yeah. That's fine. Like, and with dogs, but dogs more so than cats, because dogs like have unconditional love.
Oh, absolutely.
So the idea whenever you leave the house with a dog and the dog's like, well, that's it. They're gone and I'm on my own and this is it. I will die here. They've chosen to leave me. I don't know what I did wrong. So
that's...
Go to the shop, mate. Calm down.
It was gutting when I'm like, cool. Well, I used to be, leaving the house. There's a puppy. And then every time I go home and visit and I get to see him for like 2 or 3 days and I'm like, oh, I could just take him with me.
He's still small enough.
Yeah, he is.
He's, sneak him on a train.
He's easy to pick up. He's, I can carry him. Take him on a bag. Take him to my landlord. Probably wouldn't be happy. He doesn't shed, so it's fine.
That'd be fine. I think landlords now, I think the rules
are
changed.
Adam would be fine with me bringing him in.
Well,
and he can live in the office.
I have considered bringing the cat in, but obviously you're allergic.
I'm allergic, yeah.
So bless you.
This is a nice
like a little indicator of the kind of quality gent that you are. When I mooted the idea of bringing bringing the cat in, you said, I'm allergic, but don't worry, I'll take an antihistamine.
Yeah, take an antihistamine.
Some people would just go, I'm allergic, so it can't happen. You're like, no, don't worry, I will make my life more awkward.
I mean, I take
so you can bring your cat in.
I take one every day, but yeah, we need to take one of the extra strong ones for a cat.
One of the weapons grade ones.
My gran had cats. And I would every time I go around and visit, I'd leave like swollen up, like,
oh no,
like, thanks, Grad. Like, really seeing you.
It's nature's cruelest trick to be allergic to any.
I'm allergic to most animals, like
dogs. You seem
shedding
fine,
dogs,
mate.
Shedding dogs. We've got a cocker Springer Spaniel poodle cross. Doesn't shed. Gran had a poodle. Didn't shed. We have only had cocker poos like throughout our lives. No shedding. Doesn't bother me. Shedding. Guinea pigs? Nah, face was swollen.
Oh,
great two guinea pigs. Try and guess what we would call our guinea pig.
Bubble and Squeak.
Nah, it's a bit more named after singers and
Robson and Jerome.
Close. It was, one of them is called Elvis.
Elvis
had a little quiff.
Nice.
But mine was called Snoop Pig.
Snoop Pig.
Yeah.
Two G's.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Snoop Pig.
Excellent. Did he rap sometimes?
Occasionally, yeah.
Yeah. He just squeak a rap.
They freestyle.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute. We've left the pets alone. We've left the pets now, and you're embarking on your life away from uni. Mm-hmm. Meant to be 2 years, lasted 6 months.
Did.
Before the pandemic hit. In that 6 months, like, what did you, in terms of life experiences, did you get anything in there? Or the world shut down?
I definitely feel that was where I sort of, I don't want to say came out my shell, because I feel like it was very much part of the class at uni before that point. But being able to not have to be like, right, I've got a 3-hour commute or like round trip home and back, I can then afford more time to really dive into the work and be like, cool, well, I'll just go to we had a really great facility server, like that was called the Kilby. And it was like a massive computer lounge with as much resource as you could possibly have. I would never use that. So I think moving to Edinburgh allowed me the opportunity to really dive into the coursework and sort of not make more friends, because I was friends with everyone in the course. Our course was really, really good for that. But it just allowed me to mature in a way that, like, cool, I've got my goal. This is where I'm going. This is what my work is. I was very driven to achieve a degree I was happy with. And that first 6 months before the pandemic was kind of where I sort of helped shape that.
I appreciate that. A lot of people would have heard that question, and when you started answering it, thought it was going one way, and you M. Night Shyamalan us all. You go, you know, living at home, I had this 3-hour commute, but now I'm living on campus. I can really do more work.
Yeah.
I was like, really, get on the town, get hammered.
I mean,
social.
Plenty of that. I did do a lot of, like, we had a lot of house parties on our course. Like, we would have a lot of, we'd call them gaff parties. I don't know if that's what people would call them down here, gaffs.
I've heard the word gaff outside of Scotland, so I guess we know what you party. Meant if you were doing a gaff party.
Yeah, so we'd do that. Or, like, we hosted one at our flat. It was me, Geordie, who I did the Doctor Who podcast with, and one of my course mates, Brendan. We did that. We lived together. We were like 10, it was a 10-minute walk from uni, a 5-minute walk from work, whatever it was. Really great location. We did have a few parties, and it feels really strange thinking back to like uni parties and socials, and most of them took place in that 6 months. And I'm thinking, oh, the senior years of uni was amazing. And then I'm like, well, no, the last 2 years of uni, we were on Zoom.
They were dreadful.
It was just a lot packed into 6 months. But no, it was the period of time where I sort of managed to push myself most at uni. Because I don't know if it's the same down here. Our first 2 years don't count.
I think they're more kind of just sort of setting you up for the third
so
year.
We do 4 years at uni. So the first 2 years, they don't count towards your final degree. The final two do. So I was like, okay, that's why I need to move. Otherwise, I'll not be driven at home. I'll just sit and play on the PlayStation.
Easy distractions at home.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Because it's a weird one, because you were doing you were doing the course and you were getting the journalism degree, but you were already, by this point, sort of well on your way to careers around journalism.
I tried to do as much, because I didn't think uni was an option for me, because I didn't do well in high school in terms of grades. I was just didn't apply myself. Like, I was just getting.
Why not?
I just didn't like school in terms of exams. I was fine with everything, like coursework and all that sort of stuff, but exams, nah. couldn't, it wasn't I couldn't, I just couldn't be arsed.
What is it about the exams? Because it's funny hearing that, because we've gone in like a couple of minutes from you going, I moved to a flat near the uni, so a home near the uni, so I could just throw myself mm-hmm. into the work and really apply myself
yep.
to, I just can't be arsed. Because that's a real shift.
Well, as I said, that most of my sort of educational life, I sort of knew that I wanted to do journalism. And so the course, the stuff at school wasn't what I was interested in.
Right.
The exceptions being modern studies, history, geography, but all the stuff around it, nah.
Like, you dicked around in psychology a lot, didn't you?
Well, so we had psychology, we had philosophy. those were absolute dickabout classes. psychology was off campus, so we had to travel from the high school over to Gala Shields, which was a town about 45 minutes away that was at a college. And I just didn't, I got an F on that.
Was it just because you went to the lessons, but you just...
To be fair,
weren't asked.
About 90% of the people in that class got an F.
Wow. So that becomes a failing of the system rather than a failing of the people.
Correct. So in psychology, I'm not arsed about that. Mm. That wasn't just me. I probably, if it wasn't a 90% of the class getting an F thing, I probably maybe would have got a C. Mm. Maybe. But yeah, we did nationals, which is probably your equivalent to a GCSE.
Right.
So that's your first exams, first proper exams, nationals. I think I did all right for them. I got a couple of A's, a couple of B's, and a C or something like that. And then going into higher, I'm just like, nah, I just can't be arsed with this. Like maths, terrible at maths. English I did well. I did quite well in English, but then...
But that leans in a bit more to what you want to do.
But I was disappointed in the fact that I had done really, really well in the coursework. And then again, it came to the exam. I think I'd got a B, but when I was originally wanting to do uni, the thing was an A. You need an A to get in.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to have to go and do English again for a second year at higher. And then that year, I wasn't as engaged in the coursework. I wasn't engaged with the content of it because it had changed. So I know, obviously, I wasn't going in thinking, I'm going to do all the same stuff. I'm going to get the same stuff. I know how to do it. It's just I just wasn't as engaged with the content and the teacher, probably. So English my second time around, I got the same mark. And then I was like, cool, well, the high school, yeah, didn't work out. I was like, I don't want to go to uni. I want to take a gap year and build myself up. Parents at that point were like, no, you did shit in school. They're like, your final year, you're not taking a gap year. Go and do a college course, even if it's part-time. And I was like, okay, fair. I didn't apply myself in my last year. And they were never really tough on, like, they weren't ever, like, tough at all on me on those sort of things. They wanted me to revise, and my dad would be like, pull your finger out and go and revise, whatever. But when he was like, you're going to go and do college, I was like, yeah, okay, fine, part-time course, whatever. I was like, let me pick, at least. Went and chose a pre-degree film and foundation course, because I was like, okay, I can't do journalism. That's ruled out because I don't have the grades to get in.
Mm.
I'll go and do that in college. It was a decent course. I hated the majority of it, because it wasn't what I wanted to do. It was all very arty, and I'm not very arty.
In what sense was it arty?
So
was it like film theory and
somewhat? We had the first one. I remember they were like, "Oh, go make a short film about." I think it was the environment, and they went, "It can be either."
It already sounds
go and make arty. Your theme is environment, and they were like, you can go and do it. You can do it factual. You can do it, you know, whatever. You can have it, or you can do it in fiction piece. So, looking back, and I've thought about it before. I probably chose this because again, I wanted to do journalism and news coverage. But I did like a day in the life of Edinburgh, and I'd like followed, got up at like the crack of dawn. Bless my daddy. He was working in town anyway that day, but he got me up at like 4 a.m. He was like, right, we're going into Edinburgh. We're going to get the sun rising over Carlton Hill, over the Arthur's Seat or whatnot. We'll follow some bin men around with filming and stuff. And I'd done this, like, it was all right. It was a decent piece for a first short film, and it followed a day in life off Edinburgh, following the environment that you're in, the city as your environment. Handed it in. I got a really low mark, because she was like, my lecturer was like, yeah, just didn't capture the theme. I'm like, what are you talking about? And she was like, well, there was no characters or no script. And I was like, oh, so you wanted an actual film. and you had to do a workbook clip for every single thing. What are your inspirations? What paintings inspired you? What films inspired you? What poets inspired you? And I'm like, that's not me. That's not what I want to do. So admittedly, I didn't do a notebook for that one. Because nothing, I was like, I gave all my factual information and my findings on why I was doing it, but like, I gave no, she was like, well, what Picasso inspired you? I'm like, fuck all. So I didn't hand a booklet in, which kind of almost screwed me over, because when it came to the end of the year, my course leader was like, oh, I've got all your booklets for all the other films, but not this one. And she's like, that's not an issue. It's fine. Just, you know. We don't have it. I was like, ah, cool. That's fine. Yeah. You know, she was like, the exam board won't look for it. The exam board did look for it.
Oh, no.
So I had already applied for uni, and it was a conditional on completing the course. Nothing else. So I did, I got in to uni.
Okay.
No problem. But there was conditional on completing the course, and the exam board were like, we want to look at three students' work at random. And I was one of them.
Oh, no.
So my course leader, bless her, Jo, she was lovely. And she was really helpful through it all. And I was like, look, I've got a place at uni. This is going to screw me over if we can't find it. Knowing full well that I didn't have one. But I was like...
So you kind of, you played the game a little bit. You've got to find that book that definitely did.
She was like, what work have you got for it saved already that you could just show me now? And I did have all my findings and my reasons why I was doing it, what shots I wanted. So all the actual production side of it, I had. Gave it to her. She was like, okay, cool. Well, and then she was like, it's strange. I remember reading your booklet. It was incredible. So I'm like...
I'm not going to question that.
I'm not questioning that. And then she was like, I'm going to put in a word with the exam board. Like, all right, okay. She put a word with them. They came back, still asking for the booklet. And she, bless her, she was like, look... We're not going to find the rest of it. But she was like, I remember reading it. I remember your inspirations. And then strangely, she was like, no, you, and I was like, are you sure? I was like, do you remember reading it? Because I was like, the other lecturer gave me a really low mark for the actual piece. And she was like, no, I disagreed with that. I think it should have been a bit better. I remember reading what you were inspired by and why you were inspired by it. I'm like, what is she on about? But it worked. I don't know whether she was sort of wink, wink,
right.
We're going to get you through this because I know you've got a conditional go to Edinburgh Napier. Which, if she was, thanks, Joe. You know, but that was college for me. I was just like, yeah, it's.
It seems like you kind of always had an idea of what you wanted, and if it's the thing that and if it's the thing that you want to do, if it's a thing you want to do, then
I'll really apply myself.
All apply, but if it's anything that kind of goes steers on the outside of that, and you're like.
I think purely in an educational sense.
Yeah.
Because parts of that course, I was really into like the video editing, really into that. The documentary filmmaking course part, really great. That was
awesome.
Yeah,
that's in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. On the pieces to camera that we did, where they're like, you've got to do like an internet style show where it's delivering news. And with the group that we were in, it was Jordy again. We both didn't know we were going to be on the course until we turned up on the first day and we're like... We're both on the course. Cool. But we did it inspired by SourceFed. I don't know if you remember them. They were a YouTube channel.
Explain for those who don't know.
They were a YouTube channel that did like pop culture news in sort of the style that's been adopted by every sort of big channel that does like IGN and stuff like that. But we did it like that and we wrote it all and we led it all. And that was fun. It was just you're an artiste. When you're making a film, I'm fucking not. I'm here to write about or do a short film on something factual.
Teaching's interesting because I think on the whole it's got better. But I remember as a kid where it's like basically the teachers will have this idea of what there should be the right answer, and sometimes it's one of those things where there isn't a right answer, but they are blinkered to go, no, you must do it this way. Like for them saying, you're making a documentary, but please, you have to tell me which Picasso inspired you.
Yeah, like which painting.
Why did Rembrandt inspire you to do a documentary following a bin man around?
Yeah.
Like, and it's almost like you don't want to just put it for the sake of putting it, but...
I mean, I did for the rest of the film pieces that we did, like I made up a load of bullshit about why so-and-so inspired me. I did one that was like I think one of the themes was otherworldly or something like that. So I did a mockumentary on an alien, like Ancient Aliens type thing. I don't know if you'd ever watched with the guys like Aliens.
Yes.
Yeah. So I did that. I got a decent mark for that one, but most of the booklet I just made up, I was like, well, I'm inspired by this. I'm inspired by Signs, the movie by M. Night Shyamalan. I'm inspired by this painting by Van Gogh or whatever. So it was like, but it was strangely. Now, it sounds like I'm mocking folk that maybe are into all that, but my lecturer, again, would look at it and, oh, yes, I can really see where you drew inspiration from. I'm like, I made that up 10 minutes ago in the car here. Like, if you can get that from it, then it's I'm doing my job right.
Yeah, good for you.
I don't know how. So
when you have an art, when you have something that you want to do and the vision doesn't quite match who's teaching you, and you they probably realize actually like this is probably beyond my realms of expertise, but yeah. I've got to try and stick to the stringent framework to do it anyway.
It was weird,
very confusing times.
Did well in the photography module for that course though, which will it loops back on wrestling ever so slightly. At that point, 2016 going into 2017, I was at a point going to a lot of WCPW shows. And I was in the crowd taking lots of nice photos. And one of the photo modules, there was it was life. It was just, they were like, capture life and movement. So I was like, oh, I've got tons of photos. So I did it all from one of the WCPW shows, and there's a really good shot that Noam Dar used for a lot of his promotional stuff, actually, after, where he's on the turnbuckle and he's doing his pose where he's kissing his wrist. And I got a really high mark for that. But I was like, cool, well, that's using wrestling somewhere I'm enjoying it. And that's where my focus was.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Let's use wrestling some more. Let's get to your second match.
Second match. We're going to jump to 2011. So I was, how old would I have been at this point when the match aired?
About 9 or 10?
Close to 12. So I was 12. We're going to talk about Money in the Bank 2011, CM Punk versus John Cena.
Oh, right.
So this match was just insane for me. This, in high school, not many wrestling fans, you know, between the previous match, WrestleMania 24, and this, wrestling wasn't cool in school. People bullied you for it. You got all the classic insults. Oh, you like wrestling? It's fake. You know, it's this, it's that. Oh, you like men wearing tights wrestling each other? Yeah.
Mm.
It's entertaining. So you'd get all the classic insults. So going into high school, it was like, cool. Well, I'm a wrestling fan. I'll own it. You know, don't care what people think. You shouldn't care what people think.
No.
Just like what you like. And thankfully, there was a group of us that still enjoyed it. Just wasn't as sort of like big. Wasn't everyone running in going, however, this changed this. People that weren't wrestling fans were coming up to me to be like, what's this CM Punk guy?
Wow.
Now, it's really strange whenever I hear like anyone, like for example, for yourself talking about like the Attitude Era.
Mm.
And it's like you'd run in school or you'd go and see your mates and stuff. And it's like your people were talking about it. This was that for my generation was Punk. And weirdly, like folk that I never knew would be interested in wrestling come up and be like, whoa, CM Punk said some stuff and sat on a stage. I'm like, yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. Do you want to know more? Here's everything.
Any, did you have it? So, because obviously you say there, like, and there is a thing that in school, and I had it, and I think everybody else had it here as well. We were wrestling fans, where you do get those people that are like, oh, you know, it's fake.
Yeah.
Rubbish, rubbish. Did you have anybody that were like that then come up to you and go, oh, tell me about the wrestling now? I want to know.
Probably. I think a lot of folk were more, it was more like, oh, this isn't as lame as it was a few years ago. And they're like, oh, it's fake. I'm like, yeah, but my appreciation for it was never that. Off the back of it being real, it was just like, oh, this is really cool and entertaining.
Just enjoy it, yeah.
Yeah. So I did have probably a few folk going, no, was this CM Punk thing? Or like folk that had maybe lapsed and weren't big fans that maybe where they were back when they were a kid, coming back and would be sitting in techie or whatever would work, and they'd be like, oh, there's CM Punk going in face John Cena. Now, obviously, this was in the summer holidays, but like, or just as we were going off into the summer holidays. So it was like, oh, loads of folk like wrestling, and I'm not going to see a lot of them because we're on holiday.
Just about to make more friends.
I'm going to be cool, WWE.
Going to be the cool kid. I was going to be a contender.
So going into that match, it was like, oh, damn, this is like big. This is major. CM Punk is over. CM Punk was one of my favorites. Like, dating back years and years, Punk was one of my favorites. When I sort of learned about indie wrestling, Punk was the first name that appeared to me. So like, this is 2006 we're talking, so I'm like, oh, this guy in ECW is pretty cool. Oh my god, he's got these matches in Ring of Honor, and he signed his WWE contract on the belt for that company. What is Ring of Honor? Oh my god, he was in TNA. I watched TNA on Challenge, you know, or Bravo or whatever it was. So it was really cool to see Punk, this guy that was smaller, going up against Cena and being like, Cena used to be the guy I liked. I liked Cena, but Punk is cooler. And it was a case.
So it's Cena once again getting the shoe in.
Yeah, but
for this, somebody cooler.
Strangely, at this point, as much as I didn't like I was very early into the whole being told wrestling was fake. So it very much quickly became, I want to know how this industry works. What's the insights? What's the booking reasons behind it all? So I really hated the on-screen character of Cena, but I really appreciated John Cena. It's like, because I was as a big fan of him when I was younger, I was like, he's really good at what he does. Like, clearly, just was like, he's got to turn heel.
Because that's it. That's what happens with when you watch wrestling, and that younger point when the penny drops and you go, oh, this is, it's all fake.
Yeah.
And you have the sliding doors moment where you either go, oh, I'm not interested anymore. Mm-hmm. Or you go, actually, I want to find out how they do that. It's like finding out, it's like finding out magic isn't real. And it's that whole thing of either you're really disheartened by it, or you go, I want to learn how to do that sleight of hand.
I think, yeah, I'm very much that I want to know how it's done.
Like, how do you do it?
Like every magic show me and Rachel, my girlfriend, watch, or America's Got Talent particularly. We see a magician come up, I'm like, he's done this, he's done that. How's he done that? What's he doing there? How's the one that always, I still can't figure it out, is Peter Antonio, who did an appearance on See You Next Tuesday with Adam. Mm. Watched him on America's Got Talent. I've spoken to him quite a lot on Twitter. I'm like, how does he do it? Pisses me off, I need to know. But it was the same with the wrestling. I was just like, right, how does this piece together? How do they rehearse it all? As a fan of theater, I was like, is this, you know, is it scripted well in advance? Clearly not. It's definitely not scripted well in advance. But like, how much did they rehearse? How real is it? Mm. And throughout high school, when folk going, oh my god, this Punk guy's cool, this is got, you know, this is getting back in a big way, there was still folk going, yeah, but it's fake. And then my usual reaction would always just be like, well, what's your favorite show? And then just Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, well, it's fake. And that usually shut them up, and then they'd be like, okay, yeah. But it's still fake, though. And I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah. Just shut up. Go and play FIFA.
Which is also fake.
Which is also fake.
I hasten to add.
Yeah.
So that match then, so CM Punk and John Cena, would this have been one you stayed up through the night to watch?
Hey, I did stay up for this one, yeah. It was in the summer holidays.
So you could get away.
So I could stay with that one. I was fine to stay up for that one, but I do remember running down to Sainsbury's, getting a ton of Monster Energy, put them in the fridge. My mum's like, that's really bad for you. You should not be drinking that. How many cans do you need? And I'm like, well, that's all for tonight. And she's like, that's four for tonight. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, That's going to keep you up all night. I'm like, well, that's the aim. I'm trying to be up until 4 a.m.
Yeah, I'm trying to stay awake all night.
And then I remember her being like, she was like, well, you'll probably not be up by the time I'm going to the shops tomorrow, but do you need anything? I was like, could you get me another 4 cans? I'm staying up to watch Raw. But throughout high school, I often would stay up most Mondays and Fridays to watch Raw live, which was kind of stupid when I'd be going to school. Like, yeah. I stopped that when it got too close to exams, but early on in high school, I was like, I need to, especially after Punk's pipe bomb, I was like, I need to watch this regularly. And then,
yeah, you need to be there as it's happening.
As it's happening, because I would be like, I don't want to watch a recap. And then Kevin Nash returned. I was like, well, I don't need to watch this live.
Yeah. Oh, so it wasn't even that long before, well, like.
No, I was doing it for a good 2 years, watching every single show.
Oh, fair. Okay, that's fine. The moment that Punk won, I remember watching that. I think I watched that live as well. And thinking, what an exciting time this is about to become.
Yeah.
Because someone has just ran off with the title.
My mind was blown. I was like, has he left? I was like, the person who was inquisitive about the backstage stuff about WWE and wrestling, I was like, he's definitely signed a contract. They won't have let him win over Cena and walk out with the belt. But then the other side of me was like, oh, I just want to suspend my disbelief. And he's gone. And then I think a couple of days later, he appeared at an indie show with Gregory Iron, and I was like, fuck, he's actually left. Like, he's going back to Ring of Honor. He's going to go to New Japan Pro Wrestling. I was really like, okay, I'm just going to take a back seat and suspend my disbelief and not think too much about it. And then they did ruin it slightly for me, coming back 8 days later, after Rey Mysterio gets an hour title reign. Oh, piss me off.
Could you imagine that storyline running now, but with Triple H running the ship? I feel like Triple H would have gone, fuck off for 3 months.
But remember, Triple H doesn't like Punk.
No, obviously not. I mean, there is that. Yeah. But with somebody.
With someone competent.
Yeah, somebody doing it. Not some skinny fat ass.
Yeah.
Somebody doing the whole, I'm going to leave the company, I'll take the belt with me, yeah. Winning the belt. Someone like Triple H wouldn't have the, wouldn't be scared to keep them off TV for a long time and let them go and have fun.
Yeah,
elsewhere.
Go and have and fun embrace elsewhere. That. I think he should have, even like a month off would have given it enough time, but 8 days was a little too soon. The match itself is just one of my favorite matches of all time. I've watched it so many times, and just the way it's put together, it's the first 5-star match in WWE in what, X amount of years up to that point.
Yeah, Dave loved
it. I think it deserves it. Like, it's a 5-star match in my opinion.
It's that iconic photo of CM Punk blowing Vince McMahon a kiss as he climbs over the barricade. The dude's like, yeah, and then the guy, yeah, that guy popping up in the side, just like, oh, hello. Yeah. Another photo that I want to talk about is from 2016.
Okay.
And it's in the center of a What Culture Pro Wrestling yes. ring.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is the cast of what would become Cultaholic and
correct.
Others.
And others.
And yourself. And
myself, yeah.
How did, because this is the thing I always find quite fun, is that people assume that you're the new guy. Mm-hmm. That you've been like, but the thing is, you've been the new guy for like 8 years. Really, haven't you?
I did my work, yeah, so 4 years ago this month, I did my work experience.
We'll get onto that in a minute, because I want to ask about that. But that first introduction to What Culture, because you were doing stuff for Steel Chair magazine. Yes. Were you doing stuff with Vulture Hound via Steel Chair as well?
And Vulture Hound, the same.
They're the same people, yeah. Right? Okay.
So prior to 2016, again, me and Jordy had set up our own website. This was, I'm talking 2013. Like, cool, we want to write about stuff. We want to have a place to put things. We call it Torn Flag Reviews. We were reviewing video games, and it was the height of E3. So all this video game stuff was coming out. We were writing news articles. We managed to get some interviews with developers, stuff like that. We then I was like, well, I want to sort of go into wrestling a bit. So I was like, cool, well, I'll develop my own blog based off of what we were doing with video game stuff. And when I'd left school, I was like, cool, well, this is the WC, What Culture was what I'd been watching. I've been keeping an eye on it, and I really enjoyed it. When they announced the WCPW show, I was like, well, I'm going to go to Newcastle. I'm not in school anymore. I'm free to go down. So I went down with a group of friends, went to the first show, and I was like, well, this would be a really great opportunity to interview people, like interview wrestlers that I wouldn't ever get the chance to do, and that might bring some eyes onto my blog and then allow me to build a portfolio to go to uni to do journalism or something along those lines. It'll get me in the door of anywhere. So I emailed their press team and was like, hey, I would really like the chance to interview some of your stars of WCBW, some of the wrestlers. Is this possible? And it was Susie Kennedy that got back to me. She was like, yeah, of course, we'll put you down for a ticket and we'll let you interview. And she'd said at that point I could have one person to interview, and I think it was going to be, I think it was Hendry.
Joe Hendry.
I think it was Joe Hendry that I'd been put down. It was Joe Hendry that was being put down to interview. I turned up and she goes, Joe's not quite ready for you yet, but we've got other people. Now, I, being 17, I wasn't very experienced in interviewing.
No.
So I'd really prepared an interview, which in hindsight, I prefer now doing a free flow interview. That's something that's very loosely structured. Whereas that back then I was like, question. Doesn't matter what you said before, I'm going to ask this next question. But Susie goes, yeah, Joe's going to be about 15, 20 minutes. Here's Will Ospreay if you want to have a chat with him.
Wow.
And I'm like, shit. I don't have questions for him.
No,
I've got nothing for him.
That would give me hives.
I was like,
I'd want to go in with at least some bullet points.
I was like, well, what do I know about Will Ospreay? I was like, if you just give me 2 minutes while I set up on my dictaphone that I'd brought down with me and all my sort of equipment and my notebook. And I'm like, fuck. And I'd thankfully just been aware of Will Ospreay because it was off the back of his Ricochet match that went viral and was very controversial for its content. All the flippiness. I was like, okay, let's ask about New Japan. I knew nothing much about New Japan at that point, but I got away with it, winged it all, managed to get an interview out of it. I was like, cool, right, I've survived that. Joe Hendry does not walk over the table next. It was Damo.
Oh, big Damo!
And I was like, oh, great to meet you, a big fan, you know, thank you so much. He was like, you want an interview? And I was like, yeah,
why not?
Let's do it. So I did it and we got through, and he was way very relaxed, and he made me feel very, very comfortable to interview. And we went 25 minutes and he just gave me the full time, and it was like, man, this is really cool that he's so chill about it. And I was like, right, I've survived that one. Come at me, Joe. Let's get this.
Let's do the Joe one.
It wasn't Joe, it was Grado.
Oh!
Oh my god, this is a nightmare, but also like really cool.
It's a really good problem to have. Yeah.
So I was like, right, I've got Grado, and at that point I remember I was like, right, I've met Grado before, so I can chat with him about that. And I've met him at Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling podcast, The Fringe, and I know about his career more so than everyone else's. That's cool. Got through it. Again, I was like, right, Joe Hendry's next. Chat the jobber.
Oh!
So I was like, okay, this is cool.
He's firing people at
you. Yeah, they were really going for it. So Jack gave a great interview, great advice sort of thing. We got talking from there, and we got it done. And then Joe Hendry came over. I was like, oh, thank you. Got the interview done. And then again, they threw Noam Dar at me. And I'm like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
But I've got a lot of content now. And then we got the photos in the ring at the end of that event. It was just like, oh, that's really cool. You know, these are the guys I'm watching on YouTube. And I'm getting to do something that's adjacent to, like, similar to what they're doing, but I'm getting to utilize my own thing. So we did that. And then for the next show, I was like, look, there's more people coming to the shows. I was more prepared this time.
So how did you prepare the second time different to the first time?
I listened to all my interviews to try and find some feedback on what, and critique myself. And to just generally like listen to other people's interviewing types and see how they would do it. Mostly outside of wrestling, because I was like, well, most of the folk online, if they're going to be interviewing wrestling folk and they're not from one of the big channels or big outlets, they're going to just be a wrestling fan interviewing a wrestler, which is what I am. And I was like, I want to try and do something different. So we did make it a bit more fun. I would ask them things that weren't wrestling related, which I think they appreciate, like you often do with your interviews. It's very like, this is a wrestling interview, but it's not, is it?
It is, but it isn't. So it's just a chat. And I find that you know, you'll know this from doing it yourself. Sometimes that's how you get the best wrestling answers, or just the best answers in general.
You get the most engaged.
Yeah.
You get the most interested.
Because you got to think about, like, if you're interviewing a wrestler, most of the time they've done these interviews and they talk about wrestling all the bloody time. They are relieved to talk about something that isn't wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a long line of folk media-wise at the tables in the O2 Academy of folk, and it's like, you've just been asked the same stuff by him. let's try something different. So the second time I went, it was very much the same people I was getting given, which made it much easier to be like, cool, let's chat about your love of TV, or look up like what you've done today, where you've looked up where what my past is. I've looked up their past and be like, well, what was your, you know, what was your time and experience like doing this? And it was made it a bit more fun.
And they always appreciate it more because mm-hmm. then they go, oh, okay, well, fair play. You're actually invested in this and you've looked into it.
For Demo was an interesting one because I discovered the next show I had just started college. And one of the guys on my college course was Damo's old roommate.
Ah.
So I could be like, oh, so I know so-and-so. And he was like, oh, that's incredible. How's he getting on, sort of thing? And we had a really good chat about that. So it made it much more fun and non-wrestling for a wrestling-themed interview.
When did it start about sort of you moving over to do more stuff with Pachiti okay. and the lads?
So to it's a very somewhat long story, but one of the WCBW shows, I booked to go down with some friends and they couldn't go. So I was like, well, I'm going on my own to Newcastle. I'll put a Facebook group together, see if other people are interested. It grew decent numbers. We got quite a lot of folk for the Define WCBW page. And through there, I sort of just spoke to them more, going to shows and sort of getting to know them a bit. I think I'd interviewed Adam. And he was very, very good to interview. We sat and chatted and put that on my blog. And then from there, it's sort of just a few years on. They'd sort of, when they left What Culture, I got a message from Adam going, would you be interested in helping run our community stuff as a moderator? Yes. I would. That'd be pretty cool. So I was in first year uni at that point. Was I? 2017? I had just started university. And then I'd sort of just gone in. When we'd gone in our second term, January 2018, they went, you've got to do 3 weeks off work experience prior to the completion of your degree. So I was like, okay, where could I go? I've already done work experience at my other outlets that I'd done, like papers and stuff and blogs. So like I would put down work experience, including Steel Chair, Vulture Hound, stuff like that included in what would be a degree certified work experience. So I was like, well, ask Adam. And cool, we'll take you for SummerSlam in August. So built up that year, came down in the August, and I worked full time in the office for a month, and it was really, really cool, which is it's very strange now coming back. And when I was here the first time, it was 4 or 5 desks in one studio, everything was filmed out there. But it's very strange to come back now and we're in a completely different room. There's another office.
Yeah, it's a machine.
There's a lot of people.
It is.
So
there was the iconic photo that was taken that constantly gets brought up to you of your first day at work experience, and it's you cleaning the toilet. With Adam and Ross giving it big uns behind you. So
we put that on Twitter. It was like, we're welcoming the work experience lad. And then I think Jack was away on holiday or something, and Adam was like, we'll test you and do some video stuff. You're on news today.
Okay, and I love this because so many people, and I guess why it comes back to my comment earlier about like for 7 years you've been the new guy, where like you do news on a Saturday now with Sam.
Yeah.
And the funniest part is you were doing news videos before pretty much most of us were doing news videos.
It was doing the piece to camera.
And you're doing solo news videos pre-pandemic.
Yeah, back in 2018. I think it's funny looking back on them because I posted one on Twitter the other day because it was like 4 years that the first one went out. I'm glad I've improved since then. I was very sort of, I did a weird thing with my mouth. Like I'd be like, it would like twitch off the side.
Is it a nervous tick?
No, I never had it before.
So what'd you do? Like breathe off to the side? Just
no. So I'd be like,
cause that's an old like news journalism hack that you breathe off mic.
No, I wasn't doing that. I wouldn't do that. But bear in mind, we had the clip on.
But I didn't know whether it would like a reflex reaction.
It was literally just my lip going.
Oh.
And I didn't, it's not in any of the other ones. It's just that first one video. And I don't know what it was. It could be nerves.
Could be a nervous tick. It could be almost like a mouth shrug where maybe you're not quite having faith in what you're saying. So like while your body can't shrug, your face is shrugging.
Possibly. It was very strange. And I remember filming it and in the room, I think Adam was behind the camera, sort of helped give me pointers and stuff. And it was really, really great help. And we were doing it off bullet points. And it was like, so I'm like, I can't even remember. It was like CM Punk and Colt Cabana. And I'm like, what is my mouth doing? but it was good fun. We did quite a few of those videos and we we also did This Week in Wrestling. So that was my first day. I remember arriving and I'm going, we're going to film some this Week in Wrestling with Jen. And I think I was on with Sam and Jack. Yeah, I think I did two episodes, which was, it was really good fun doing that. But it was funny that the first things I filmed was one of the last things that went out.
Right.
Because we filmed that one episode apart. So it was like, cool. Well, that's... any improvement I would make over this next month is completely gone.
It's for now, because now the thing that I did before I made all the fixes is now out last.
Jen was like, oh, did you enjoy your time at Cultaholic? And it's like, I'm like 45 minutes into my tenure. Yeah, it was great fun.
Thanks, you had a great time. It was lovely. It was good fun. It was good fun.
So we did like, and I remember Adam saying we'd do little skits at the start of news. The first one is like, oh, if this doesn't get 2 million views, you're back to cleaning the toilets. Or the next one, I'm cleaning the toilets, literally cleaning the toilets or scrubbing the bins, reading out mean comments, which I thought was hilarious. I thought it was brilliant. I think we'd sat and wrote a couple of them, and some of them were legit, which I stand by. I do look like that would be a leader of a chess club in high school. At that time, and probably still, I am a B-Tech Kenny McIntosh. Which, like, creative mean comments.
I'm all for a creative mean comment.
Incredible. I thought they were so funny. I would sit, I would finish, video would go up, I'd be like, cool, where's the mean ones? Come on.
Yeah, come
on. Let's go. And if they were creative, I would give them a like, and I'd be like, yeah, you know what you're doing.
They don't seem to, at least on the surface, they don't seem to phase you. Mm-hmm. As much as admittedly they phase me on the odd occasion. Is that the case, or?
Yeah, I don't really get.
Because you see, you just seem like, it's whatever. That's the best attitude to ever have.
It's a reaction. Mm. You know, people are responding, that's cool. If they don't like me, that's fine. I'm not bothered. That's I'm not a cup of tea. Mm. And like, as I said, the funny mean comments, B-Tech Kenny McIntosh, whoever wrote that, if you're still watching the content, well done, that's incredible.
Yeah,
like if you've got that much creativity, B-Tech Kenny Mac. It doesn't really bother me. It's just what it is.
It's a healthy way to be. Yeah. It's a healthy way to be. So I mean, those 3 weeks then. So you did 3 weeks of workplace, but then you were also, by this point, Cultaholic was an established thing.
It was about a year old. Yeah.
Yeah, and you were working. So this is where a lot of people would probably have had their first interaction with you, because you still do, like, mm-hmm. sort of moderate our online community, yeah, and stuff like that. But what's been nice to see is you kind of found your way through and doing more stuff on camera. How did sort of that start to come about again? Do you remember?
As in just the recent sort of
stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
because it's happening more and more, and it's great to see.
Well, just, I think back in April, Adam was like, would you be interested? Or one day he was like, do you want to do a news video today with me? Yeah, absolutely. That's what I specialized in at uni, was broadcast media and doing stuff on screen or writing for screen. So I was like, yeah, absolutely. Big fan of not missing out on opportunities. Hmm. Get offered something to do, just try it, you know. And it must have gone well. He was like, do you want to do a Saturday? Yeah. I'll change my work schedule. So I've got Sunday, Mondays off on a Saturday, me and Sam on news. Great team. Love doing it with Sam. I think we've sort of really developed a good back and forth where we know how we're working and what we do. So it's good fun.
I remember we did one, because you'd started doing them, and then the mm-hmm. opportunity arose. Me and Fraser were going to do one. Mm-hmm. And I did the first one. And I've just kind of sort of... I think after my first news video here, I think Adam went, right, you're going to lead the next one. And I think I pretty much led the news videos ever since.
Yes.
And that was kind of, I'm fine with that. I'm happy, you know, it's kind of, mm-hmm. that's my background. I mean, you're
an anchor on, well, radio equivalent.
some people put a W at the front of that.
Radio equivalent of an anchor.
Yeah, and I love that I can use that skill set. But what was actually really wonderful was the fact that we sat and did one, and I just got this energy from you where I'm like, I don't think I need to lead these. And I seem to remember that we did the first one. Mm-hmm. And then I think maybe we were doing three. You left the studio to take the cars and stuff into the other office. And I think I messaged Adam and I said, I want to try Fraser leading. And he went, yeah, go for it. And I just, because I just think, I just feel like there's something there. And it's, do you know what I love is, it's because it was a trial that you, again, as you said just there, just take every opportunity and go for it. And you rose to it. And for me, it was a challenge as well, because I'm like, I'm now so accustomed to leading it. I've got to learn just to pare back, shut up, and let you crack on. And that's reassuring for me.
Because you're good at your segues. So I know you like doing your links. So it must have been tough getting speaking of such, and then...
But that's great for me as an older boy to learn a new skill set. And it's nice. It's a reassurance for me, weirdly. That I know that you can crack on and you can lead them. Because, you know, I mentioned this when I was in the pub with Adam and he found it hilarious. Because, like, I'm at a point where multiple radio jobs, like, somebody new, somebody young has come along and I've been hoofed away. And I've learned just to roll with it. So, like, and I was saying this to Adam and Adam said, you're not getting old yellered just yet. I said, like, I know, but should the time come, I know that the news is in great hands and it's fine.
One of the... first conversations we had in person actually was we were at the Old George as pubs reopened and things opened up a bit, and you were mentioning the fact that I was too young
because you were, damn it, you still are,
because you were like, you know, I think we were just chatting about all things like company wise and work, and I was asking you about your career and you were asking about my degree and stuff, and you were sort of like, yeah, you know, like I've got to sort of adapt and learn new things. I want to stay going.
Because you were really good with helping me with like TikTok and stuff like that. Because I knew it was something that was new. And there's people who are my age now in the radio industry and in other industries.
You say that like you're ancient. But you're in your
30s. I am. And everything's relative. Everything's relative. Yeah. I know I'll get response with this from somebody going, shut up, I'm 43. Yeah, I know. But everything's relative. Like, I'm, you know, YouTube and TikTok, it's a young man's game. And I'm the elder statesman here. And I'm super cool with that.
Yeah.
I'm not like panicked about it, you know, and I've had a great time doing what I do, and it was great to have you there to go, look, I really want to try and adapt. I want, if and when the time comes and, you know, industries chew me up and spit me out, like, it's not for one to try in, it's not for wanting to adapt and be more relevant and in the moment. And it's like, so I was like, just help. I need help from young. I need help from young. As the night, that particular night wore on, this is a funny story. As that particular night wore on, I think we're all out and we all started buying drinks for each other's tables. So there was a lot of alcohol.
Yes, there was a lot.
There is bit of the evening I don't remember.
Okay.
And then it was the next morning where I looked at my phone and I'd print screened a reservation for Chicken Coop.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, I do not remember us booking a table at Chicken Coop, but we did.
We did. So I was literally going to bring that up. at that point, there was a lot of alcohol being had, and you'd said to me, we were sitting opposite each other at the table, and you were like, no, this was going to just be a drink for us at this point. You know, everyone's coming, that's great. I'm going to take you for dinner tomorrow.
Yes.
I was like, oh, that's really nice of you, Tom. I'm in Edinburgh in the morning, but I'll get back in the afternoon. You're like, go, that's amazing. I booked it. And I was like, all right, what time? And you were like, 6:30. I was like, where? And you never told me where. No, you didn't tell me where. I pieced it together about, I think it was like 2 hours later at this point.
Amazing.
When you had your phone on the table and you were very close to spilling drinks on it.
Sounds about right.
So I moved it out of the way and I think Alex was there. And she was like, I'll take that. So she took it. And then I think you'd, whether Face ID or whatever it was, but you'd unlocked it, I think, to get an Uber home. And the thing was up. And Chicken it was like, coo. I was like, that would have been helpful to know. You weren't going to tell me.
I was just going to let you find the restaurant. Guess.
I mean, to be fair, I think I would have guessed Coop. Like, if I was going to guess, I would have guessed Coop.
Oh, I haven't been that bad drunk since, it was my birthday. But, and not since then, though, not you're on. Then. Not since then.
Christmas party? No. Christmas party.
No,
was
do you know what?
That.
I was I was actually very good at the Christmas party. Mm. Because I was very... The thing is with the
Christmas...
We had North Show the next day. Right. And also, I normally go overboard at Christmas parties. And I think because I'd had like that sort of blackout-y bit at the, our previous gathering. I was like, I never want to get to that point again because as hilarious as fun we have, there's nothing that makes my skin crawl than by looking at my phone and seeing photos I don't remember taking. Like, that really puts the shit up me. So I thought, I never want to get to that point again. And there was a few occasions at the Christmas party where there was a little sliding doors moment of it could have done. Like, I think at least three occasions, Pachisi handed me a Sambuca that I casually left somewhere else.
But I mean, opening your phone and discover that you've booked a table for food, that's a great thing to find on your phone.
That's a nice thing to find, isn't it? That's a nice thing to find. I've not hurt anybody except myself whilst not remembering the next day. Be mindful how you drink.
Drink responsibly.
Drink responsibly, kids. So now you're here and now you're doing stuff on a Saturday. And as I said to you, I feel relieved that there's not relieved because it sounds like like there are people here that lead videos when I'm not here. I'm not arrogant and stupid enough to think that's the case. But I like the fact that there's somebody who sits opposite me where, like, if my workload gets a bit too much, I can go. And Adam's wildly busy as well all the time because he runs the flipping business. So it's nice to have somebody else here that, you know, will just. Everybody can do it, but you embrace it.
Yeah.
And that's the I think that's the fundamental difference for me is that I know everybody else could do it, but I know that you, like me, embrace it.
Thank you. I do try and embrace it as much as possible.
Well, I can tell when I watch them. I can tell that, like, you're in your element.
What I'm enjoying on a Saturday is getting to try out both, where I'll lead a video, Sam will lead a video. So we're back to back. If we sometimes have three videos, then we'll
move it around and mix it up.
See what we can do. But it's great getting that experience. And one of the most fun ones, actually, recently was doing a stream with Sam over the, I think it was playing through the entire card of SummerSlam.
Yes.
That was just really fun. We had a police raid that day, which was crazy.
Has that story been discussed on a podcast?
We discussed it on the podcast. I nominated it for the Hall of Fame and it didn't win. The list of Fraser won, which was Jack's list of everything I was arrogant about in a 3-day window. Some of them, I don't like mayo. We included that on the list. Right? My non-enjoyment of the song Jerusalem, because I'm Scottish, so it doesn't have anything for me. You know, it's also the national song of the Conservative Party. And the BNP. And so I was like, you know, mocking it. What was the other one? And the other one, making up teachers' names, which I didn't, but it sounds made up. My math teacher in high school, Mr. McMath. His name is Mr. McMath.
That's incredible. So,
That was the arrogance of youth on display.
The arrogance of youth on display. For those who are curious to know, how deep does the rivalry go between Jack and Fraser? Because I can say from sitting opposite you, the tension is palpable.
Tension is high, you know. Any little movement, it's like...
Tension is borderline sexual.
It's between me and Jack.
It is, and it would be.
Any sudden movements and we're ready to fight. It's tough.
For those who are watching, it is incredibly so. Yeah. It is incredibly so.
I mean, if you watched the podcast two weeks ago, we're sat next to each other. It was for 4 hours almost. Don't know how we did it.
What are your, just to shift it a bit, you're only a young man still, arrogance of youth and all that.
Yeah.
What are your ambitions from here?
It's a tough one because, like, as I said, journalism was the thing. So I would quite like to explore as many opportunities in that. Like, I know I was very lucky at the end of uni, before graduating, I had this job. So I was able to go into it. And there was not a lot of people in my course, and a lot of my friends weren't as lucky getting in a job because the pandemic was still we're still recovering from the pandemic. There wasn't many jobs out. But a few of them went off and working at papers or working in the BBC or working on ITV. And that really interests me. And I'm like, that's maybe TV production side. I'd love to do something like that or doing documentaries. That was always the sort of thing in uni that I've got on my YouTube channel, that all my portfolio stuff. And some of the ones I'm most proud of were the Giving Wrestling a Go. Went and did that like a week before the world shut down. And I trained them. I was like, look, not everyone can do it. And it hurt. And then, it was fun. So I did that. And I was like, I can maybe explore this. And we'd as part of the course, it was like, what would you pitch to a channel? And if I hadn't got this, I was dead set on pitching that to BBC Scotland as a program, as a documentary series about the world of wrestling and sort of getting in that region. And the other one I did was on plastic waste and renewable energies, and that was another TV package that I did. And I was like, well, I enjoy them. I enjoy doing them. I really enjoy the sort of structure of them, pieces to camera, doing stuff like that, and just winging it and being like, right, I'm going to take a camera down and film, and we'll get a story. I want to do more of that eventually at some point. Like, I have no intention of leaving here anytime soon. But as a grand goal, I would say, yeah, something like broadcast journalism.
Nice. Yeah. I'm glad we're not losing you anytime soon. Mm-hmm. That's a deep joy. As well as taking three wrestling matches onto an island, we also allow you to take a movie, an album, and a luxury item. So, when you hear those three things, when I first say to you, you can bring a movie with you, what movie springs to mind?
So there's two ways I can look at this, because I've got a favourite movie and I've got one that is like,
That was me.
I think it was you the time before, but it was me this time.
We're starving on this desert island.
Yeah. So I would say it's a toss-up between two. One, because I just love the movie, but it's not very rewatchable, which is why I might not take that, but The Martian.
Okay. That's the one with...
Matt Damon
on Mars with hilarious results.
Yes, it's Ridley Scott's space... it's not really an epic, but it's a space survival film. Really like it. It's got a really great soundtrack. David Bowie's in that, and like loads of good music. But it's not really rewatchable. So I would probably choose... it's basic, but one of the MCU films, I would probably... Avengers Endgame.
Nice!
Yeah, just because it's 3 hours. That'll entertain me for a while.
Yeah, that's it. So the end game over Infinity War. I guess with the end game, you've kind of got a somewhat happier ending than Infinity War.
Yeah, probably that. I think that's probably would clinch it. I preferred Infinity War overall.
I just think it's nice to have one of those films where the baddie just so dominantly wins.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole film, it's just one after another, after another,
it's,
after another.
It's a
after
Thanos
another.
Movie, not Avengers.
It's a Thanos
film.
Movie, but, isn't it?
Yeah, I would take Endgame. Yeah.
Nice shout. Okay. How about an album?
So, my favorite band is Half Moon Run, which I don't know how many people are familiar with them, but if you've ever seen the trailer for Assassin's Creed Black Flag, it's the music. They're the band that plays in the trailer for it. I'm very excited. Rachel got me tickets for my birthday, so I'm going this year to see them in London. But I would take. Probably their newest album, Blemish in a Great Light, because it's the one I've listened to the most, but it's not got my favorite song in it, which is really annoying.
Oh, no.
So I take Blemish in a Great Light plus Full Circle.
Okay, so you get that bird onto an extra CD.
Yes,
so you
get correct.
You're a memory sting. I don't know what you kids do.
Yeah.
Luxury item.
Does it count if it's plugged in?
Yeah, right. we don't worry too much about the logistics.
PlayStation 5 and television. Maybe a generator to power them.
What are you playing on your PS5 at the moment?
Currently, I'm going through the Assassin's Creed Ezio trilogy. So I've just finished Assassin's Creed 2. I'm currently midway through Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. My aim is, because I've got no plans to buy any new games soon, there's nothing major coming out that I want, and I'm kind of trying to save money, I'm going to try and play through all of the Assassin's Creed games.
Right.
See if I can get through it. Black Flag's my favorite game, or one of my favorite games. That's the aim to get through.
Nice. Like it. Let's get to your third and final match then, Fraser Porter. So to recap, we had, for your three, we had Edge vs. Undertaker from WrestleMania.
Yep.
We had the Money in the Bank match between Punk and Cena. What's your final one
going
to be?
My final match. Now, I'm going to choose. I'm looking at my options here.
You can only have three.
I can only have three. I'm going with, now this is, it's keeping a similar theme, but CM Punk versus MJF in a dog collar match.
Ooh, so you've gone for a modern
one. Revolution 2022.
Okay.
So this match, I think just how, it was just a really good match that took me back to Punk being the indie guy that I discovered and being like, that. I really enjoyed all of Punk's matches since coming back to wrestling. But this one hit on a different level for me. Just like, I'm invested in both these guys. It's not to take anything away from Eddie Kingston or Darby Allin, who he'd faced on, All Out or Full Gear. But this one was just like, I genuinely want to see MJF get destroyed here by my favorite wrestler of all time. So of course this match was incredible. Also getting to just sort of experience it with other people and watching it, and then having Mysterio Cantare play his Ring of Honor theme.
Yeah, all the little touches in that.
Yeah,
his Ring of Honor gear,
his gear, the tracksuit he was wearing, the crowd. It was just a really good show, and I think that was the strongest match on it. I've watched it a few times already. This match, I just can't. It's definitely one I would rewatch multiple times.
When you think about that match, is there a moment that you think about?
I've rewatched it at the entrance. It's more so the entrance than the match. As much as the match is I think is fantastic, but it's the entrance where Punk stands up on the middle rope and the whole crowd are chanting and singing along with him. Just really cool. Or even Wardlow coming at the end and not giving the ring.
Where he can't find the ring.
Can't find the ring.
Like that bit was a particularly nice touch.
I would say that's my one. And it was a tough to narrow it down to the three. As I said before recording, there's a wee honourable mention.
Oh, go on then.
Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston from WrestleMania 30.
Oh, great shout.
Just I watched it with mates at a Shark Bar in Newcastle, Shark Club, whatever you want to call it. And I think it's one of the most feel-good moments of professional wrestling history.
Yeah.
Just fantastic.
It came about like so accidentally.
Yeah.
And they just went with it and they let it happen. And they didn't... WWE has a history of kind of bottling it at the last hurdle with a big moment like that. And they let it play to its full completion. A clean win for Kofi Kingston.
Yeah, it was a surprise. Title. I was thinking this is going to be a little dodgy finish, but no. Went over clean.
Clean
it was
just cool. Whistle.
It was really cool. So that's my honorable mention.
Nicely done. Nicely done. Fraser, before we let you go, I like to always end on something a little bit deep like this. So let's go back to Fraser, age 7 in Peebles.
Yeah, yeah.
You've been to see your mate and you've wrestled and your mum's told you off, made you play football. Don't know football. You're walking home on that night in Peebles and you're 7. And you can go back with all the knowledge that you have now.
Yep.
And you can give yourself a little bit of advice. Just a word of encouragement or a bit of advice. Just very briefly, what would you like to tell a younger version of yourself?
Probably just apply yourself a little bit more in high school, because then I wouldn't have to have done that year in college. And then things would have advanced a year quicker. but probably something like that. Or just like, it's journalism.
Save yourself a couple of years.
Yeah, just, you know, so something like that. I would say something like that.
I like the idea of you going, journalism.
Yeah, what? That's what it's journalism. It'll make sense. probably something like that. I can't think of anything else really. That's probably it.
Nice.
There's nothing. No other major advice I would give myself to younger. I attribute a lot of it to luck as well, and right place, right time. As much as talent or whatever can get you places, a lot of stuff is who you know, how you know them, and what you can do for them and what they can do for you. So like,
I see. That's an interesting theory. And I subscribe to it to an extent.
Yes.
And there is a bit of like, in the sense that luck will maybe, like a door will fly open in front
of you. That's
what
I mean, yeah.
But it's your ingenuity and your talent and your ability that makes you walk through it.
But I think there's so many little things that had to, like for to be sitting here now, if my friends hadn't cancelled to go down to that WCBW show, wouldn't have made a Facebook group that went then, would make Adam go, do you want to be the moderator for our community? Which then opened the door. That's luck.
Wow.
As much as it is. As much as talent can get you anywhere.
Mm.
That talent might not be realized if luck didn't get you in the door, which is appreciated. And like, it's timing, all down to timing. Like if I graduated a year earlier, if I do go back and tell my 7-year-old self, apply harder at high school, I would have graduated the first year of the pandemic. At which point, we likely wouldn't have been able, the Cultaholic might not have been able to bring me in. Uh-huh. So I might not have been sitting here. I might have gone off and got a job at a paper in Edinburgh or working wherever. It's
butterfly effect.
So many little things. Yeah.
Stuff.
Which is, it's weird to think about.
Yeah.
I might have gone home. I might have continued working at Tesco. When I left, put my notice in, they were like, what can we do to keep you maybe going manager role? Do you want to be a manager? I'm like, no, not really. I didn't get a degree for that.
You know? I see that you're a journalism student. would you be interested in being a manager?
Like that's what it was. Like they were like, yeah, do you want to be a manager?
And but that's a testament even to them that you were so good at what you did that they didn't want to let you go.
Yeah, I guess so. It was the end of 5 years at Tesco. I need out. I'm very proud of my degree and getting. I got a first class degree. I think I left with a 76% average of grade, so I'm very proud of that. I didn't want to stay in Tesco baking things.
Life is all about rolling with the unexpected items in the bagging area.
That's good.
Cheers to you, you lucky bastard.
You do this professionally. Look at him. Fucking showing off.
Would I go for dinner after this? I won't tell you where.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.